All right. When I was born, I had a baptism and a bris. When I turned 13, 2 days before my bar mitzvah, I went to my grandfather's open casket Catholic funeral and took communion for the very first time. I was brought up in an interfaith marriage, and what that really meant was that nothing was provided for me. Whenever I had big questions, I would be told something like, well, your father thinks this, I think that, you're going to have to figure it out for yourself. So that's not so easy when you're looking at the big questions. And probably because of my grandfather's funeral, right around that time, I started really grappling with death. Now, I know everyone goes through that, but I think I had an especially bad case. I would stay up nights for weeks and months on end. I would have bad dreams where my grandfather would come out of his open casket and start talking to me. I'm like, oh, what's going on? I became a wreck, and part of it was because I had just faced it at a young age, I guess, or somewhat young. Part of it was probably because I didn't have any easy answer. There was no heaven. There was no whatever Jews believe. And if you look at science, I mean, that was the scariest thing of all to me. I was terrified that we were just these biological automatons that when we got switched off just disappeared. That was the worst thing I could imagine. So that was just eating me up. Now, I come from the school where if you have a fear, you go right at it. Like when I was about 6 or 8, something like that, I used to be very, very scared of heights until there was a family trip to Toronto, and I went to the top of the CN Tower, and I stood on the glass floor, and I looked down, and I didn't fall. And after that, I still would have the same physical reaction. I still would get a little bit of vertigo, but now it was like a pleasant vertigo. It wasn't an existential crisis anymore. It was something I could deal with. So that's what I wanted to do with death, and I worked at it. I went looking all around. When my parents said, you're going to have to figure it out, I don't think they expected me to go to Buddhism, but that's where I wound up. There were a couple things with Buddhism which really appealed to me. One, there was universal tolerance. Any way that you can figure your way up the mountain is a perfectly good way to do it. Now, I really liked that because everyone else, someone in my family was getting left out. So I wanted everyone to be able to come with me wherever we were going. And the other thing is also, in Buddhism, it took a very scientific method. You weren't given anything that you had to believe. There was no faith involved. This was all knowledge-based. This was something you could figure out yourself. Indeed, you already knew this. Now, as a natural-born know-it-all, that really appealed to me. I was like, yeah, I got this. Hey, I'm God already. I just don't even know it yet. I mean, that was really good for me. I liked that. But I still wasn't getting any closer to solving my death dilemma. And eventually, it just got to be too much. Life was in the way. I was like, all right, I'm going to have to attack this later. Got to go to my good colleges, get my good grades, all that. And then I'll deal with it a little bit afterwards. And that's basically what I did. Right after college, because of this, I went to Japan. And part of that, there are lots of reasons why I went, but a large part of it was because I did want to face these big questions and figure out some of these answers for myself. I was going to take myself with all the Western culture that I've got built into me and transplant it over there and hopefully come up with something good. So I wound up in this small little town in Japan, about an hour and a half north of Tokyo. When I say small, I really mean it. There was one restaurant in the place. I got on an elevator once, the only elevator in the entire town. It was in the town hall. And there was a little girl in there with me, with her mom. And she looked up at me. I was the very first foreigner she'd ever seen. She hid behind her mom's skirt. She would peek out. She said, he doesn't have a horn. And hide again. Peek out again. He doesn't have a tail either. So very removed, very, very small little place where I could really just work on myself. And that's exactly what I did. I was going running every day. I was meditating every day. I was doing dream work where I was able to become awake inside of my dreams and start to control them from within there. I was doing something where I was actually able to stay awake the whole time I was going to sleep. And that was really cool. That was really fun. I mean, I can fly anytime I want now, but it was sort of like a parlor trick. I wasn't getting any closer. So I'd be running out. I'd had a trail through a bamboo forest. It would go by this old abandoned shrine. There would be a pheasant that came out sometimes, would say hi to me. Like, hi, pheasant. You don't get to choose your power animals. But I was doing everything I could. And one day, I was stuffed into this little itty-bitty pink car driving home from work when I had all the questions, all the big questions just going through my head. And they were going faster than they ever had gone before. They were getting extremely intense. They were turning inside and out. They were turning me inside and out. I was, are these the right questions? Is questioning the questions the right question I should be asking? Is this the right... At that point, my brain froze. Now, what I'm about to tell you is going to be difficult. This is supposed to be the sort of thing that you're not supposed to be able to put into words, but I'm going to do my very best. I ceased to be me for some stretch of time. All the thoughts which kept claiming that they were me were gone. My brain had reset. They were nowhere to be found. I was just in this deep, perfect bliss. It was like it was the first time I had ever actually seen the world. I had ever actually seen reality. And the best way to describe it in terms of what I felt like I saw is I was, or the not I was, this silver lake filled with mercury in the middle of nothing, just floating placidly. And then I heard a bird song. And the bird song played along the lake, creating these little ripples. And the only way to say it is, I was, for that brief moment, the bird song. And then my brain started to tick back on a little bit, and I started having thoughts, and all of a sudden there was the ego in me going, hey, hey, you're doing it, nice job! As soon as that happened, it all fell apart. And all the things that were not me but wanted to claim they were me were right back, and I was back to my normal self. But I felt almost an instant nostalgia for the moment that I had just lost. I felt disappointment that it was gone, but I also felt enormous pride that I had done this thing. I had finally reached some sort of great goal. And that pride is probably what did me in. Soon after, I went to a festival at this little town, and we would carry this huge shrine. It was a portable shrine. It was about 1,000 pounds. You would need 40 guys to carry it. I had gone running before, and they told me it was going to be about 2 hours. We would carry it through the town, then dance as we took the god from his normal home to his summer residence. So, walking around, carrying the shrine, it wasn't any 2 hours. This was 4 or 5 hours just lugging this shrine. And in Japan, I'm a tall guy, so it's pounding down on my shoulder over and over. It's a really hot day. We've run out of all water. We've run out of everything except for sake and beer. So I'm just throwing back the sake and beer. And at the end of it, as I'm getting just delirious, I look up and I see these colors floating out of the shrine, and I'm like, that's probably you. That's the god there. You better appreciate what I'm doing. I'm killing myself for you. And I was kind of right. I got some pretty bad heat stroke. I was vomiting every hour on the hour for about 24 hours afterwards. And everything at that point really just went to nothing. I stopped my running. I stopped my writing. I stopped my meditating. And to an extent which I'm not really comfortable with, I stopped asking the big questions. But I can't feel too bad about it. I can't feel that much shame. For one thing, when you're talking about spiritual pursuits, shame is probably the most dangerous emotion you can have. So I didn't want to have anything to do with that. But also, at the very least, now, when I think about death, I just get a pleasant sense of vertigo. And I see a silver lake. And that's enough.